Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science interviews and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, evidence of lakes on Jupiter's moon Europa. A meteor shower to watch for. Here's a scientist soundbite.
Lie back in those hours before dawn and just look up in the sky, and what you'll see are these bright streaks across the sky, sometimes called shooting stars, also known as the Lyrid meteors.
That's sky watcher Deborah Bird. More with her later, but first, science news of the week with Michael Brennan and Emily Howard.
From April 13th to the 16th, a major tornado outbreak occurred across a large portion of the central United States and into the Great Lakes region. The storms resulted in 6 tornado-related deaths, all of which occurred in a mobile home park in Woodward, Oklahoma, which was struck by an EF3 tornado. In all, 103 confirmed tornadoes struck the U.S. Central Plains all in one weekend. Most were in the state of Kansas. Tornadoes were also reported in Iowa, Nebraska, Oklahoma, and North Texas.
Jellyfish are increasing in the majority of the world's coastal ecosystems. This, according to a study published in the April edition of the journal Hydrobiologia. Scientists from the University of British Columbia examined data for numerous species of jellyfish in ecosystems around the world. They found increasing jellyfish populations in 62% of the regions they analyzed.
For 1,000 days, the infrared array camera aboard NASA's Spitzer Space Telescope has been operating continuously to probe space, from our own solar system to the most distant regions of the universe. In April, to commemorate 1,000 days of infrared wonders, NASA released a gallery of the 10 best images. You can see them on our website, that's earthsky.org.
Researchers at the Max Planck Institute for Molecular Genetics in Berlin have now discovered that licorice root contains substances with an anti-diabetic effect. These amorphitins not only reduce blood sugar, they also are anti-inflammatory, and according to the researchers, they are well tolerated by the body.
Earlier this month, astronomers announced evidence for a record-breaking 9 planets around the nearby sun-like star HD 10180. Results from 2010 had shown that the star has at least 5 planets, and possibly as many as 7. The new results, proposing a 9-planet model for this solar system, would make HD 10180 the first star to surpass the number of planets in our own solar system, and suggests that our sun is not alone in hosting a large family of diverse worlds.
We've got good news for penguin lovers. New satellite images show that there are twice as many emperor penguins in Antarctica than previously thought. The new figures are likely to be a vital benchmark for scientists trying to assess how future changes to the Antarctic climate will affect the birds. I'm Michael Brennan.
And I'm Emily Howard. That's our science news of the week.
We've got some great science interviews coming up, but first, Song of the Week this week is by Jesse Woods, and it's called Neon Rose.
Before it ends, before it ends.
Find us as EarthSky on Facebook, EarthSky Science on Twitter, and at EarthSky.org. Deborah Bird joins us now with news of the global night sky, a meteor shower to look for. Welcome, Deborah.
Hey, Jorge. This is the Lyrid meteor shower, and the peak mornings to watch for it would be the mornings of April 21st and 22nd. So that's not the evening of the 21st and 22nd. It's the morning of April 21st and 22nd.
Okay, so what are we looking for here?
Well, so you want to go outside to a dark country location and, you know, take a lawn chair or something like that, lie back in those hours before dawn, and just look up in the sky. And what you'll see are these bright streaks across the sky, sometimes called shooting stars, also known as the Lyrid meteors.
Deborah, tell us a little bit about what these meteors really are. I mean, what's happening out there in the sky?
Well, you know, they call them shooting stars, but they really have nothing to do with the stars. They're really just little bits of dust that are floating around in our solar system. They tend to be left behind in the orbits of comets. Comets are kind of icy, fragile, snowball-ish objects. And as they move through space, they litter their orbits with this icy debris, these little bits of ices and dust. And so when this stuff enters our atmosphere, it vaporizes due to friction with the air. And we see that vaporizing bit of dust as a shooting star or a meteor streaking across our night sky.
Incredible. Why is this called the Lyrid meteor shower?
Well, meteors and annual showers like this one, like sometimes you see what's called a random meteor, and that is a meteor that you don't expect to see. That's just a random piece of dust or a random rock or something entering the atmosphere. But this is an actual annual shower. It happens more or less at the same time every year, and that's when we cross the path of the comet that left this debris behind. So it's called the Lyrid meteor shower because it appears to radiate from the constellation Lyra the Harp. And Lyra the Harp really has nothing to do with the meteor shower, other than that the meteors appear to radiate from there. So Lyra the Harp is a constellation in our night sky. It's made up of stars. The stars are, you know, trillions of miles away, you know, many, many light years away. The meteors are very close to us. They're right in our own atmosphere. But it's as if you're standing on a railroad track and you look far down the track and you see the two tracks on either side of you begin to converge in the distance. And that's what these meteors do. They're actually coming into the atmosphere on parallel paths, but because of our perspective on them, we see them appear to radiate from a single point in our sky, and that's the point that happens to be around the constellation Lyra, so we call them the Lyrid meteors.
And one thing I'd like to point out also is that you don't have to really look for this constellation in order to see these meteors.
Not at all. In fact, the meteors, the brightest meteors, don't become visible until they're maybe 30 degrees or so from Lyra on the sky's dome. So you don't need to know where the constellation Lyra is. All you need is to just kind of lie back comfortably under a dark sky on the mornings of April 21st and 22nd and look up.
And so one other thing, will we see the moon? Will the moon get in the way of this meteor shower, moonshine?
You know, you might remember that I was coming in here last fall and talking about the late 2011 meteor showers, and they were all obscured by the moon. The moon was in the way for every single major meteor shower for several meteor showers in a row there, beginning around in August of 2011, all the way through the fall meteor season. But yay, no moon for the Lyra meteor shower. The moon is going to be new, or more or less between the Earth and Sun, right around the time that the meteor shower is happening. And by the way, Jorge, that brings up something else, that is that after the Lyra meteor shower, immediately after it, beginning around the evening of April 22nd, 23rd, 24th, 25th, 26th, that whole last week of April, you're going to be able to see that waxing crescent moon return to the western sky after sunset. And once again, it'll be near the bright planets Jupiter and Venus.
Late April sounds like a great time for sky watchers.
Absolutely. So that's the mornings of April 21st and 22nd, the Lyra meteor shower. You need a dark country sky. Just look up to see the shooting stars. And then the evenings of the 22nd, 23rd, 24th, 25th, 26th, the waxing crescent moon back in the west after sunset near the very bright planets Jupiter and even brighter Venus.
Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird. And we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. Scientists have discovered the strongest evidence yet of liquid water on another world in the form of underground lakes as big as the Great Lakes on Earth, below the surface, though, of Jupiter's moon Europa. Brittany Schmidt is a planetary scientist in the Jackson School of Geosciences at the University of Texas, Austin. She led a study that found lumpy, cracked areas called chaos terrains on the icy moon of Europa, which indicate the presence of pools of water trapped in extraterrestrial ice. Brittany Schmidt joins us now in the studio to explain the findings. Dr. Schmidt, welcome.
Thank you very much.
So tell us, what are the main findings of the study you've led and published in Nature that's found evidence of liquid water on Jupiter's moon Europa?
The main result of the paper is that Europa's ice shell, it's a thick ice shell covering a global ocean, possesses these large liquid water bodies, much like lakes, but perched inside the ice shell. And why that's exciting to scientists is that it indicates that Europa is still active today and that its ice shell is overturning rather rapidly, involving a great deal more liquid water than originally supposed. And that's an exciting result because of the implications it has for Europa's ocean and possibly even these lakes being habitable.
Now, what do you mean by Europa being active? What's going on there?
Well, Europa, for a long time, we've known, has a thick ice shell, tens of kilometers thick, overlaying a global ocean, and has a deep interior that's much like the Earth's, that's rocky, probably with an iron core. And we think that there's maybe internal activity that is given to the planet essentially from its tidal interactions with Jupiter. As Europa orbits around Jupiter, it's tugged and pulled, flexes, and it gives it frictional heating and heats up the interior. That heat has to get out some way, and so the ice shell convects, actually, much like the mantle of the Earth does. Cold material sinks, warm material goes up. So what's interesting about this perspective is that this material that's warm from the inside is actively making its way up to the surface. And when it reaches the very cold outer edges of Europa's ice shell, just a few kilometers of brittle, impure ice, it's causing melting. The images that we analyzed are from the Galileo spacecraft, and it flew in the Jupiter system in the late 90s and early 2000s. And this spacecraft had lots of images, but we weren't really sure if Europa was doing anything at the time. And this paper, using those images, builds the case that Europa, in fact, was changing actively right before our eyes in a way that we weren't able to understand at the time and now can. So it's basically saying that much like the Earth, Europa's overturning, and it's got these geologic processes that are continuing to have the surface evolve, which is exciting in terms of the habitability perspective.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the evidence and maybe a little bit of a background on this. Tell us a little bit about how scientists know that there are lakes beneath the surface trapped in the ice, and a little bit about what's gone into that understanding.
Really, the story of finding these lakes is the story of using perspective from our own backyard, basically. When I came to the University of Texas, I came here to join a group that does terrestrial cryosphere work, basically studying Antarctica and the Arctic, trying to understand how ice interacts with rock there, and also how ice interacts with water. And that perspective is what gave us the tools to use to reanalyze this Galileo data and see something new in it. And so really the evidence boils down to height. Topography is a really important tool to understanding how planets work. Mountains on the Earth tell us that the Earth has been, you know, has had plates sliding around. Erosion and the shapes of those features tells us the history of water and the history of how the surface is changing. And in the same way, when you look at ice, both on the Earth and now on Europa, you can use that topography to tell you something about how the ice shell works and how that place works. So the real evidence for the lakes is the fact that at one location, one of these chaos terrains is called Terra Macula, the surface is depressed in a large circular area. And that circular area is about around 100 by 100 kilometers, so relatively large, about the size of, I think it's like Lake Ontario. But the surface is dropped down by about 400 to 600 meters in this whole area, and the big icebergs have kind of cracked up, and they're floating along higher than that lowest point. And what that tells us is that the material below this feature on the surface is still liquid. So there's a giant lake. And if you use how much the surface is depressed as an indicator of about how much water is below that, then you get an answer that's, you know, a lake that's 3 to 4 kilometers deep, which is, in fact, the depth of the Earth's oceans. So inside this ice shell, we've got this evidence for trapped liquid water bodies. And it's basically because the icebergs are floating. The surface is depressed down, which tells us that it melted. And then the icebergs are floating, which tells us that it's floating on water.
That's amazing. So we're talking about Great Lakes trapped in the ice shell of Jupiter's moon Europa.
Correct.
Give us your take. What do these findings of liquid water, these liquid water lakes on Jupiter's moon Europa, what do these findings mean for the search for life beyond Earth?
Yeah, I'm really excited about those implications. And really what it says is that there's another place in the solar system that's active right now and that's maybe filling its oceans with the ingredients you need for life. And from the perspective of this paper, what we're saying is that the ice shell is overturning actively. And so if the ice shell is overturning, I mentioned that all of this material is raining down on the outside of Europa, you know, that now oxidant-rich ice, it can now be pulled down into the ocean. And so what it's doing is it's basically like a highway bringing you know, food for the ocean down through the ice shell.
I'm sure people have asked you this, but I mean, what do you think life might look like in these lakes on Jupiter's moon Europa. Are we talking about fish, or what are we talking about?
Well, we don't. You know, this idea of lakes is so new that hasn't really been teased out exactly. What we do know about life in ice on the Earth is that microbial, you know, very small life is happy to live inside the ice. It lives on grain boundaries. It lives in small brine pockets. You know, it probably lives in in the subglacial lakes in Antarctica. We may soon find out as they tap into Vostok. There's life that exists in subglacial lakes in Iceland that's been seen. So, but those are all small. What I think is even more interesting to me is the potential that if this active recycling of Europa has been going on since the beginning of the solar system, then that may in fact bring enough energy down for more complex life.
You've been listening to planetary scientist Brittany Schmidt. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Special thanks this week to our musical contributors. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next stage. There are so many artists, too much heart, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. What you don't know won't hurt us. What we don't know won't keep us up at night. What we don't know won't hurt us. But we don't know, but we don't know, but we don't. What you don't know won't hurt ya. What you don't know won't end it. There are fine. What you don't know won't hurt ya. But you don't know, but you don't know, but you don't.